welcome to the penultimate House of Comments of 2023. We've nearly made it, guys. We've nearly made it. I'm Charlotte Henry. She's Emma Bunnell.
Hello. Wasn't sure we were going to at times.
I don't disagree, but we're close. Let's not count our chickens just yet. But we're close. Well, thank you for sticking with us for this year. It's been quite a tumultuous year in politics, and this show actually rather sums it up, what we're going to discuss this week, because there's quite a lot of ups and downs and all sorts of things going on. Let's start with another potential by-election for the Conservatives. Merry Christmas, Rishi Sunak, because Conservative MP Scott Benton is facing 35 days suspended from the House of Commons for what the Standards Committee says is a very serious breach of Commons rules. This is around a sting that the Times did, and he was seen lobbying for, it was the betting industry, wasn't it?
Yeah, gambling industry, yeah.
Yeah, they got him on that. The original story didn't make for very pretty reading for Scott Benton, I must say.
And some of the excuses he came up with were extraordinary.
Yes. I think more than his excuses, I found the bits I read of the Common Standards Committee report pretty amazing, because it was very, very strong language. They were deeply unimpressed.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a deeply unimpressive whole thing. I mean, he couldn't have been more brazen, really.
I mean, look, he obviously tried to push back against the allegations and so on, but the Standards Committee didn't pull its punches. Here's a quote from what the report said. He was corrupt and, quote, for sale, and that so many were other members, and that so were many others of the House. Ouch.
Yeah. And I think that's where they're probably most cross, is his claim that it ain't just him and everyone's at it. And I think the Standards Committee in particular will be wanting to say, no, absolutely not.
Yep. It adds, that Scott Benton, quote, communicated a toxic message about the standards of Parliament and unjustifiably, that his actions or his comments, unjustifiably tarnished the reputation of all MPs. Ouch.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's really made an absolute pig's ear of this. And you can sort of see, oh, well, maybe if he kind of put his hand straight up and went, oh, man, I shouldn't have done that, they might have gone a little easier on him. But the fact that he's been so pig-headed and trying to come up with excuse after excuse after excuse has just made him look worse. It's made Parliament look worse. It's made the Tories look worse. There's no accountability. And I think, you know, those of us who remember the 90s,
please tell us, Emma, what were the 90s like?
Well, there was a lot of day glow.
Right, okay.
But, yeah, this is what happened. It wasn't just cash for questions. It wasn't just that weird damn thing that everyone was very up in arms about. It was lots and lots and lots of scandals that just fed into this sense that the Tories were, as a group, corrupt. And I think that...
Oh, it all got very messy and murky and miserable by the end, didn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's worth saying that one of the biggest lobbying scandals of the last few years has been Greensill, which has been almost completely whitewashed in this whole... Oh,
I
look,
thought you were
going to
mention...
back in the room.
I thought you were going to mention this when David Cameron came back.
Yeah, and he's not... You know, so once again, what we've got is someone who had a big, big lobbying scandal being treated as the beating core of the Conservative Party.
Well, we should say David Cameron does I think, deny he's done anything wrong in that case, doesn't he?
Well, as Mandy Rice Davis once put it, he would, wouldn't he?
Listen, you can send the lawyers letters to Emma. I'm saying David Cameron has denied the allegations. But it was certainly one thing that is undeniable is that there was a huge amount of interest in it and a huge amount of controversy around it. There's no denying that. Let's get back to Scott Benton, because he obviously now has to wait for this recall petition in his constituency.
The next step is that Parliament has to vote to accept the recommendation, but that's pretty much a given.
I was taking that as assumed. So yes, once that's happened, we assume there will be a recall election. I think that must happen.
I mean, there hasn't been one so far where they haven't managed to get that recall petition. There will be organised activity, I suspect, both from the Labour Party and Reform in the seat to get as many people as possible to sign that petition.
Well, I think you're going to be absolutely right, because the majority is only, it's basically 3,700.
Yeah.
It's just under that. So that is a very, very vulnerable seat.
And according to UK polling, Labour are odds on favourites to win it.
Oh, I don't see any circumstances in which they wouldn't turn that over.
I mean, there are complications. I think one of the most interesting things about this might be how well Reform do and how much they eat into the Tory vote, because that will, if they succeed in being the difference between a Labour win and a Tory win, that will absolutely scare the bejesus out of Rishi Sunak. And if you think we've been boats so far, you ain't seen nothing yet.
I just can't see that happening. It's Blackpool South, by the way, the constituency.
Well, I don't know. They're third in the UK polling.
I think they're put up a good show.
And they're looking.
I don't think anything will stop Labour winning that seat.
Oh, it's not whether they'll stop them winning. It's whether they make a big enough showing that they are the difference between Labour winning and not.
Sure. And these things, look, I know this from the Lib Dems, these things can often get distorted. If you're the smaller party and people are sometimes more inclined to vote for you in a by-election, you know, the Lib Dems win by-elections, they don't win in general elections, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think Reform are going to win. I think they're going to take a lot of votes off the Tories. And we've seen from the massive overreaction to Uxbridge what can happen when things happen that are unexpected in by-elections.
Mm. Yeah, no, very valid point. And off air, I'll tell you about my nights out in Blackpool when I was at university.
I have similar stories from my 20s because my uncle lives up there.
Well, we will compare notes about our nights at the Winter Gardens. Is that right? Is that what it's called? Anyway, let's move on.
And that's not where I was going out, but yeah. Were you at Lib Dem conferences?
No. I was at Lancaster University, my friend. But let's move on from that. Please, quickly. And unceremoniously jump to Rwanda. And
no one else is.
And the battle about that piece of legislation in the Conservative Party. Emma, I was nearly going to say to you at the top of this show, Rishi Sunak's had quite a good week, hasn't he? He won the Rwanda vote. He did very well at the COVID inquiry by all accounts. And then PMQs happened. And we will get to PMQs in a minute. But let's start with this Rwanda vote, because he did eventually win.
Now, he won and he won fairly comfortably. Now, this is the...
Quite right.
If he'd lost at second reading, it would have been the first time since 1986 that a government had lost a bill at second reading.
So just to put that in context, it's never happened in my lifetime.
There you go. Shut up. So it is incredibly rare for people to bring down legislation at that point.
Just explain to people what second reading is. It's the first time the Commons gets to debate it, right?
Yeah. So basically the first reading is literally just the reading of the name of the bill.
Yep.
And it means that it's starting its process. Second reading is when they have their first debate. It's on the principles of the bill. Then it goes into committee stage where they do line by line scrutiny. That's where a lot of amendments will be added.
Yeah. And we'll definitely see that with this piece of legislation.
There will be lots of amendments put forward. Where I think the right of the party have gone slightly wrong on this is that second reading was probably their best chance to vote it down with a majority, because Labour are not going to support their amendments.
No.
Whereas they might well team up with the One Nation Conservatives on amendments to make the bill more compliant with compliant with the law. And that would then give Rishi Sunak a headache on his right. I mean, Labour probably won't vote for the final bill, whatever happens. But if they, through committee stage, support certain amendments that make the bill, that water down the bill, that make the bill more legal, that do what the One Nation group wants, when it comes to its third reading, which is the final part, House of Commons stage, it needs to go through the Lords,
sure,
as well, who will also absolutely eviscerate it. What is going to come back at the end of the process will not look very much like what it is now. And the problem is that Sunak has said to both sides of his party, we cannot change what it is now. I'll show a bit of ankle and I'll pretend that I can change it. But if I go any further down the path the right want us to, Rwanda will reject it. And if I go any further down the path that the...
Can you just say that previous sentence again?
If they go any further towards the breaking more laws, the Rwandan government have said they won't accept the scheme.
You said it with a straight face twice. No, you said it with a straight face twice. Thank you.
I couldn't do that last week. If they go any further towards strengthening the international law components, the right will reject it. So Rishi Sunak has lived to fight another day. And once again, in that classic unlucky general way of his, started the week with this decent win. Then Scott Benton happened. And it's just like he cannot have a whole week.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I suspect I'm trying to work out what makes more of an impact. In Blackpool South, Scott Benton makes more of an impact. In the country at large, does this make more of an impact? The boat stuff?
Only if he actually gets a plane.
Yeah, maybe. I'm just not sure there's many people sitting around talking about Scott Benton, whereas there probably are people talking about Rwanda.
I think there are people talking about Tory sleaze.
There are probably people
talking about just in general the Tories being both useless and corrupt. The useless is this bill, the corrupt is everything else.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm sure that, yeah, I mean, you're probably right. I'm just trying to think out loud about which bits make the biggest impact. So the so-called Rwanda Safety Bill. Passed by 313 votes to 269. To be honest, that's not actually the bit I'm interested in. What I found fascinating were these I always tease you about Labour factionalism, right? But I mean, the conservative factionalism.
Thus speaks an orange booker.
Correct. that was on display was quite astounding. The quote was this, the five families of the Tory right. Then you had the one.
Somebody
nation.
Needs to stop watching The Godfather every fucking weekend.
I mean, it did sort of feel a bit like Mark
Pratt's you are not a mafia don. You're a backbench MP.
I mean, it did feel about quite a lot like that. And Marc Francois, everyone waiting eagerly for Marc Francois' proclamations. I mean, for goodness sake.
I read somewhere, I wish I could remember who'd written this because I would credit them, that Marc Francois is Penfold to Bill Cash's Danger Mouse.
Right, that's a lovely image. You know, I just find this stuff. Here's what I can say. If this was Labour, I'd be taking the piss out of you that they'd found a way to combust. And the Conservatives are doing the same. They cannot help themselves on issues like this. They cannot help themselves going more and more into their little groups. It looks completely like end times kind of behaviour.
Well, what was extraordinary, I was listening to a Spectator podcast the other day where they were genuinely talking about a potential split, like actual split in the Conservative Party and becoming two parties.
What, a One Nation type party and a sort of reform type party?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fascinating thing to get into. We'll have to do it sometime next year, but because it is a fascinating possibility. And when you see them behaving like this, I just find the whole thing bizarre. I've said to you before on the show, I find it bizarre that this is the row Rishi Sunak chose to have. You pointed out, well, what else is there? And you're probably right.
And they are terrified of reform, particularly with Farage coming third in the jungle.
You know what? We'll discuss reform in our end of year looking ahead show next week, because I don't quite get that they're such a threat. But we'll talk about
whether they are or not. And we will talk about it. And we may well have some actual data from that if there is a by-election in Blackpool South.
Mm.
But it doesn't matter whether we think they're a threat. It matters whether the Tories think they're a threat.
Of course. Absolutely. I just find it bizarre that they're getting their knickers in a twist about this party that this is not UKIP. Anyway, we'll come back to it. Let's just finish off this. So we got this bill passed at second reading. It was a decent win from Sunak. He had to do a lot of glad handing and hand out the bacon sandwiches and the breakfast to a group of MPs, didn't he? He had to do a lot of, you know, had to work the phones to get this done. But okay, that happens. He obviously did it well enough that they managed to get this over the line, as you say, at second reading, at this sort of first significant parliamentary stage. I think probably if you're him, you think it's a win, right?
Oh, it's more of a win than not getting it over the line, right? Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. I think they must be feeling reasonably happy with how that went, but I wouldn't rest on their laurels just yet. This is a long, long way from over.
Absolutely. I've got another curveball question for you.
Okay.
Does James Cleverly believe in this?
No. I mean, when Yvette Cooper said that he was quoted as calling it batshit, he hasn't denied that.
I mean, he doesn't come across as that passionate about it, does he?
No. He doesn't believe in it at all. He doesn't think it's going to work, which he's completely
right
about.
Yeah, it won't work. And I think that actually you and I gossiping about parliamentary back and forth is one thing. But the fundamental point is, how will this work?
No, it's supposed to be a deterrent, right? A deterrent.
Presumably.
For people who are... That's the whole argument, is that it's a deterrent, right? Because only a couple of hundred people will go to Rwanda.
It's a deterrent, but Rwanda is lovely and safe.
Rwanda's safe, but it's a deterrent.
Right.
It is, exactly. But also, these are people willing to cross the world's busiest shipping lane in tiny, unsafe boats, massively overcrowded, to get out of France. These are people who are not going to be deterred by the minuscule national lottery-style odds that they might be sent to Rwanda.
And I'm pleased you said the word people, actually, multiple times, because I think this is completely getting lost
this
horrible debate. And we saw someone die this week on the barge, on the Bibi Stockholm barge, and that is a human being. And we are forgetting, well, not we, people in this debate, it is being forgotten or not acknowledged that these are human beings, often in desperate situations that we are talking about.
Absolutely, 100%. Now, we should be very, very cautious and adhere strictly to the Samaritans guidelines about...
We don't know what happened, but the point is...
We don't know what
there's
happened,
someone who is no longer alive,
there is somebody
and it's horrendous.
Who's no longer alive. They were on that boat that initially they were moved off because it had listeria. We are being so inhumane as it is, never mind passing a whole load of new nonsense.
And I just want to remember that these are human beings. Look, do we know that there are some people sometimes who abuse the asylum systems? I'm sure that's happened. But it does not happen enough that that we need this kind of horrendous, some of these cruel reactions, and just seeing someone lose their life should remind us of that.
Absolutely.
And look, you and I have both acknowledged, and it is important to acknowledge, social cohesion matters, countries being able to manage their own borders matters. Those are fundamental things in countries. Those things matters, but also countries should look up in privileged countries like our own, should look after people less privileged than them. And that I will never deter from that.
absolutely. And even if we, and when we reject some people, they are still people.
Right.
They are still human beings. And we should be managing that system in a way that is so fundamentally less dehumanizing, and manage our language about this debate in a way that is fundamentally less dehumanizing, because it dehumanizes us too.
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, this has got a long way to go. Before we moved on, I wanted to, it had really upset me this week, and this debate always really bothers me. And I just wanted to end by message. Look, we're a politics podcast. We're always going to discuss the politics, and that's fine. But we sometimes should acknowledge the people affected by the politics.
Absolutely, 100%.
Well, as we've been doing this, normally this happens to you and I as we stop recording.
This should have happened 10 minutes after we stopped recording, right?
Yeah, this should happen about half an hour's time, but it hasn't, because we have just learned, breaking while we were literally in the middle of recording this, that the High Court has ruled that Prince Harry was the victim of mobile phone hacking by Mirror Group Newspapers. It has awarded him £140,600. Mr Justice Fancourt, I'm reading from the BBC here, said that Prince Harry's personal phone was targeted between 2003 and 2009. 15 of the 33 sample articles, I think that's the articles submitted to the court, were, and this is a quote, the product of phone hacking or the product of other unlawful information gathering. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, this is important for two reasons, I think. Certainly, the politics of this is important for two reasons. You will, I'm sure, in your fabulous newsletter, go into the kind of media implications. But there was previously, this had been contained within the News of the World in terms of the legal findings.
Which, of course, is not Mirror Group.
Which is not Mirror Group. It's News UK. So that this is now in a different newspaper group is really significant for all the regulation, all of the things that we will talk about in terms of the way that the press is overseen by politicians and politics. And on that, the second thing is that the government, largely at the behest of their rich media friends, absolutely buried the second part of the Leveson inquiry recommendations. And that is not a good look today.
We're going to have to come back to the Leveson inquiry, I suspect. Let me just read you the reaction from Mirror Group Newspapers, MGN. Spokesperson said, we welcome today's judgment that gives the business the necessary clarity to move forward from events that took place many years ago. Where historical wrongdoing took place, we apologise unreservedly, have taken full responsibility and paid appropriate compensation. So their approach obviously is, sorry, that was another lot. We'll pay the money and move on. Okay, I get why they would say that. Look, we can't make allegations about what's happening now, but you're right to say that there's going to have to be a conversation about government reaction. There's also going to have to be a conversation about major media group reaction, because I'm not sure it happened a while ago, nothing to see here at Gov, is going to land. It may well be true. I hope it is true that nothing has happened since 2009, which is what this case covers. I hope that's true. But I don't, we often say, go back to what the public actually hears in these types of cases. Mm. All the public hears is the mirror hack, Prince Harry's phone.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I would be vastly surprised if there aren't people who were working there then who are now have more senior roles, either there or somewhere else.
There's going to be a whole lot of media industry fallout from this. Yeah. There can be no doubt about it. We're not going to speculate on who did what and when and who's doing what now.
No, absolutely. I'm not. I have no idea who the names are. I'm saying that the way that the industry works, that will be the case.
There can be no doubt that there will be broad implications for this. There can be no doubt about that. I'm also going to be fascinated to see what the public reaction and the political and the media reaction to Prince Harry himself is, because it hasn't exactly been kind over the last few years.
No. The anti-Harry stuff. I mean, I'm anti all of them. I don't give a shit about a single one of the monarchy. But because in that kind of my enemy's enemy is my friend sort of way, I'm more team Harry and Meghan than I'm team anybody else, simply because they're all the people I don't like them.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see. I mean, I'm assuming this, it's a, I assume we're going to have a Secretary of State reaction. Lucy Fraser will obviously have to react, I would imagine. I assume someone will ask an urgent question in the Commons and try and get her to the Commons. It's Friday to, you know, it will happen early next week, I imagine.
Yeah, they're sitting until Tuesday, so they've got Monday, Tuesday to do it.
Tuesday, yeah. So I suspect that will happen. And that will be very interesting to see. We might have to pick up on that next week. But anyway, we wanted to bring you that breaking news. We've got other things to discuss, but we just wanted to bring you that just to prove that sometimes we get lucky and the news happens while we're recording, not when we're
not
after.
Straight afterwards.
So just to recap, that's Prince Harry was proven to be correct and his phone was hacked. Between 2003 and 2009, he's getting a whopping great bit of compensation, over £140,000.
Bit
in
of a drop
damages.
In the ocean for him, though, isn't it?
My guess is that will go to a charity.
Yeah, yeah.
I would imagine.
He could give it to Impress.
I've heard less believable things. Okay, let's carry on back to Rishi Sunak. Not the Rwanda bill, because we've covered that. But as I say, I was going to start this show being like, oh, he's had a good week, hasn't he? He did pretty well at the COVID inquiry. And I think he did do well at the COVID inquiry. He was...
He did all right. He was, he was occasionally tetchy, but he's Rishi Sunak, so, you know.
No, you see, I thought he wasn't, and I thought he was going to be. You and I both thought he was really going to lose his temper.
That he didn't start screaming and shouting is not the same thing as occasionally sounding like, why am I here? God, why are you dreadful people asking me questions?
Sure, but I thought, from the clips I've seen, I didn't sit and watch it for hours, you won't be surprised to know. You'll forgive me for that. But he did... You know, he had very, let me tell you what, I think it was him doing exactly what he's good at. It was all about detail. He sat there with a huge file of papers in front of him. It was all about specifics and detail and data points. And he was good at it. He knew what he was going to say. He'd obviously prepped well. You know, it wasn't Johnson trying to bluster everyone. He was prepared to go with a KC point for point. I thought the KC sometimes, was a bit fed up with him. And I think you could like or dislike what he said, agree or disagree with what he said. That's not really my point. My point is I thought he was pretty comprehensive.
I mean, he didn't make a lot of news, which is a win, I guess.
Bingo.
Yeah. I think that's fair. He didn't make a lot of news.
And actually, I thought, you know, he asked, when he said, you know, he was asked, for example, obviously, he was going to be asked about Eat Out to Help Out. That was one of the big things he was always going to be asked about. And actually, he made the very reasonable point. Again, you don't have to agree with it. You could think the scheme was a disaster. But he made the point that he didn't have, you know, balance and witty could have gone to him at any point. And it was launched in the context of a reopening and in that framework that they'd already agreed with. So why wouldn't they do it? You know, those kind of things. And actually, when he said it, it sounded, you know, sensible, reasonable, thought through. And that, for him, is the win. That's where he's at his best.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it was a disaster. So that, in the big scheme of things...
Well, okay.
It led to further lockdowns, which he least wanted to have.
People would argue about the actual impact of it and the data of it. But, okay.
I'm torn because I have friends in hospitality.
Sure.
And they were on their knees. They were desperate. Whether that was the right approach to helping that industry, that is contestable. But in terms of his performance, again, I'm going to say the same thing I say every time we discuss the COVID inquiry. There is the day-to-day reporting, who's up, who's down, who's in, who's out, who's interesting, who's not making news. It doesn't matter in the grand scheme of what this inquiry is actually all about.
And this was the end of the second module.
Yeah. And the most gossipy module.
For sure.
There will be lots of other things where we'll find out other stuff. But we're done with the...
Politicians being
the politicians and fireworks.
Yeah. But I will say, I think he did well. I think it was the type of situation where he seems to be quite comfortable. And then, so he persuaded people to vote for the Rwanda bill. He'd done this performance at the inquiry. And then we had PMQs.
I didn't watch PMQs, so I'm very much looking forward to hearing what your take on it is.
Well, it's not that I watched it. It's just that and I'm pleased I didn't in a way, because I saw the sort of what normal public people will see, which is that on a question about homelessness at Christmas, Rishi Sunak lost his temper.
No.
And Labour jumped on it with this, you know, the social media meme of him pointing and is looking very angry at Keir Starmer. And look, to be honest, I get it. Like, he'd had a hell of a 48 hours, had to get through PMQs. And
if he didn't get through PMQs by the sounds of it.
I'd have lost my temper about 3 days before. So I sort of get it in a human level, but on a political level, it sort of undid the good, I think, good is not quite the word, the sort of successes, if you like, that he had earlier in the week. It was not a good look. It's going to be something that Labour can grab and clip and bash him for. And it's not great.
No. And ultimately, it's not okay to only be good on Monday and Tuesday if you're Prime Minister.
I mean, it's a fair point. It's a fair point. And look, all politicians are humans ultimately and have human reactions to things and are exhausted and busy and frazzled. But anyway, actually, talking about homelessness at Christmas gives me a little opportunity, actually, to plug something that you and I both care deeply about, which is Crisis at Christmas.
Absolutely. I'm not doing it this year because I'm exhausted.
Yes, I think.
But I will be back, I'm sure, working as a shift office or a general volunteer. And it's so important. Honestly, it's 2 weeks. We give people 2 weeks of a place to reset. I always joke with you, Charlotte, you'll have heard this before, that when we arrive on day one, all the volunteers are bright and shiny and bubbly and sparkly and happy. And our guests are tired and bedraggled and desperate for a shower and a bed. By the end of the week, so everyone volunteers for a week and it runs over 2 weeks. By the end of the week, the balance is very much flipped and the volunteers are shattered, having done, you know, somewhere between 4 and 7 12-hour shifts. And the guests have slept, they have showered, they have fresh clothes, they've had manicures, they've had haircuts, they've had a whole load of advice, Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, housing advice, welfare advice,
multiple meals,
hot, really good hot dinners. You know, the people who chef these are incredible. And it makes an enormous difference. There are some guests that we know we'll see again and again and again, particularly the center that I used to work. It doesn't exist anymore. Was the high dependency center. So people were allowed to bring alcohol in with them because otherwise they simply wouldn't come off the streets. And it's a fairly well-known statistic that if someone's on the street for more than 6 months, it's much harder to get them off the streets. But there are, every year there are wins, and we do find ways of getting people into accommodation and turning their lives around. And there are also volunteers who were once guests.
Yep.
And that's an extraordinary thing too.
Yep. You can head over to crisis.org.uk. I'll be doing it. It's a donation. It's a £29.73 gift donation. You can round it up to 30 quid. You can hear from Emma's retelling of her personal experiences. It makes a huge, huge difference. People, I've supported it for many years, and I will leave the link in the show notes. Well, we've only got a couple more days of Parliament left. Presumably, the Conservatives will want it just to kind of the year to just ride out. They've had enough, really.
I don't suspect. I mean, apart from, as we now know, there's almost certainly going to have to be a comment on the media just in time for Christmas.
Mm.
But I don't think there's anything big planned or coming up.
Well, it shouldn't be.
Everything's on a one-line whip, as far as I'm aware.
Like, parliamentary management should say you don't do anything next week.
Yeah. So I don't think it's there's anything... I mean, Rishi Sunak can trip over his own shoelaces even when they're tied. But he'll probably get to Christmas without doing himself much damage.
And of course, what's interesting is when MP... I know it's Christmas, so it's not quite the same as the out-and-out campaigning that gets done in other parliamentary breaks locally. But MPs go to the shops. MPs go to the pub. MPs have people come up to them in the street and say things. And often what happens is being away from Parliament and in the constituency can sometimes freak MPs out more because people come up to them and raise XYZ issue and it gets raised multiple times and then suddenly they freak out about it. So yeah, we could see some of that in the new year, which will be very interesting.
Yeah. And of course, in the new year, Sunak has the much harder part of the Black is White Rwanda bill. And we'll have to steer through that. We will almost certainly see the NHS in crisis because it's the winter. And to be honest, the NHS is in crisis in the summer now, never mind the winter. COVID is on the rise, which will add to the burden. And I'm trying, you know, the economy shrunk in the third quarter. If it shrinks again in the last quarter, we're in recession. I don't think Sunak's got a great 2024 ahead of him.
It will certainly, yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough. And then obviously he's got to go ploughing into election at some point. We'll talk about all of that next week. I want to leave you with something that's going to make you laugh. You're going to enjoy this.
Okay.
there was a very sweet, I thought it was quite sweet, video that Number 10 put out of Rishi Sunak visiting a school yesterday. Some very sweet kids in it, being very sweet with Rishi Sunak. He was quite nice. It was very sweet. But they, of course, started chatting about all sorts of things, these kids. And the kids asked, you know, they were talking about their favourite flavours of ice cream. And the kids asked Rishi Sunak, what's your favourite flavour of ice cream? Emma Bunnell, what did he say?
Vanilla?
Of course he said vanilla.
God, he's so boring.
He did try live now by saying he liked chocolate chips in it, but of course he said vanilla, which did make me laugh.
Oh my God. I mean, Jesus Christ, get a mint choc chip in your man.
Oh no.
Rum and raisin. No, we kind of rum and raisin because he didn't drink, but...
Let's just leave it at there are better flavours than vanilla. And probably...
I like a bit of vanilla every now and again.
Come on.
But yeah, it's not an answer.
It's not an answer.
It's not a favourite. No one's favourite is vanilla.
Anyway, it did make me giggle. I thought the video was actually very nice. And he did... like, but it did make me laugh that bit. Emma, where can people keep up with you?
I have my Substack, which is Hard Thinking on the Soft Left. And then I'm on a million different social media platforms, usually as Emma Burnell _.
Lovely. I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across most of social media, or sometimes at Charlotte A. Henry. Head over to theedition.net or newsletter.theedition.net to read blogs. Newsletter, I will, of course, be dealing with the Prince Harry stuff today. It's all on media and tech. And of course, please... I tell you what, I was going to highlight our Patreon, which really does make a difference. If you go to, look for us on Patreon, and links in the show notes. It makes a real difference if you want to support us for $6 a month. And for that, you get access to both of our newsletters, and we're going to be doing extra podcasts in the new year as well. So it would be amazing if you could head over to that. But what really... it also really makes a difference just to, like, share the show and tell people about the show and... you know, leave us a like on Apple Podcasts.
Give us a review as well if you like us. All that really stuff does make a difference.
It really, really does. And, you know, we all know that it's sometimes hard to hand over cash, but just doing those things at no extra cost really does help support us. And we really, really do appreciate it. So thank you.
Get in touch if there's something you think we should be talking about as well.
Oh, please. We love hearing that. We're at HOC Podcast on the Twitters. So, yeah, that really does really does make a difference, and we'll really appreciate that as well. Yeah, so I think that's covered everything. And we'll be back for a sort of review of this year, look ahead.
It will be the House of Comments Christmas party.
Yeah, we'll probably get our mince pie out or two, and we'll see you then.